So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. State Senator Luther Olson has decided that 25 years in both the Assembly and the State Senate is enough. The Ripon Republican has been representing the 14th Senate District, but he's decided to not seek re-election. Senator, thanks so much for allowing us an exit interview. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Steve.
What's democracy like in a pandemic?
Well, that's a good question. You know, this building is empty. I haven't been here for 3 months. We had a virtual session, Zoom session, a while ago. That was interesting. We're having joint finance tomorrow, finally. But I think that really democracy is a lot of executive decisions being made, and the legislature is pretty much out of those kind of decisions. If you look at the money from the federal government, that all goes to the governors. They decide where it goes. Legislature is not a part of that. Dealing with shutting things down and stuff. It's sort of like, I was talking to somebody a while ago, and it's sort of like a war. You know, the general has to decide where you're going. The troops can't run the battle plan, and I think the general has to run the battle plan, and that's sort of the way it's been.
What about the retail nature of politics? In the 14th District, that's a big district. I mean, you're used to going to fairs and parades and all that.
Nothing.
None of it.
No. When that the order came down, my calendar cleared totally. Nothing. No meetings in the district, no meetings in the office. Of course, we were pretty much done legislating. We were going to come back one more day, but it just got totally wiped clean. They're having some virtual meetings now, but like you said, no parades, no chicken barbecues, which I really like and miss. And so you just don't see the people that you normally used to see all the time.
Do you think your constituents are less involved in state and local government issues as a result of the pandemic?
I think they got different concerns. I think they've got concerns depending on if they're working or they want to stay healthy or what's going on in their personal lives. So I think probably they watch the news and see what's going on, the decisions with the governor and the courts and now the protests and things like that. They're watching that pretty closely. Although it's interesting because I talk to people once in a while lately and they said, we just don't watch the news anymore. We can't watch it. We got tired of 2 weeks of COVID news and it just became so depressing. We don't know what to do and we don't know who to believe. So they just sort of shut it off.
You played a key role in the Senate. Chair, Senate Ed, Joint Finance. Why did you decide to not seek another term, sir?
You know, 2 months after I would be sworn in, I'd be 70 years old. And I just thought, I do not want to be working when I'm 70 years old. I could, but I don't want to. It's time for somebody else to do it. 26 years, it'll be when I'm totally done. And I've told people, I said, it's great when your professional life and in your personal life, it's time to retire at the same time. And that's sort of what happened.
You're from Ripon, birthplace of the Republican Party. What grades do you give the leader of your party nationally, President Trump?
Well, conduct not so well. You know, you get your grade and then you get your conduct grades and things like that. He's done some good things, but he just tweets too much, he talks too much, and so I'm really concerned about the role model that he is placing for kids to watch, and even adults, because now he's played into this tribal mentality that we have and just keeps ginning up, you know, the folks that agree with him, and there's a lot of them. I mean, I've never seen so many Trump flags or any kind of presidential flags in my life in the district. So he has a lot of support out there. People really love him and there's people that really hate him, and that's really sad, because we should have a president, especially in a time like this, that people coalesce around and get over their differences, but I don't see that happening.
Well, about 10 days ago, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, this is her word, she's struggling on whether to support the president on November 3. Are you struggling, or are you just going to vote for him?
I'm going to vote for him because I just am concerned about, you know, if Biden is the guy. I think he's old. Nothing wrong with being old. I just am not sure. And I don't agree with his politics, so sometimes you take the good with the bad.
Okay.
In fact, honestly, in life, you always take the good with the bad. That's the way life is. Nothing is perfect.
Take a long view. You were elected to the Assembly in 94. Then you came to the Senate, I think, in 2004, correct?
Correct.
How has the legislature and how it works and the personalities, the interaction, and the synergies changed over those 25 years, sir?
It seems, it all depends on the makeup of the legislature. When I got here, we controlled both houses. The first time in 24 years, the Republicans had the assembly. Governor Thompson was the governor at that time, and he had the ability to work with both sides because he had to work with a Democrat assembly at that time and then off and on Republican or Democrat Senate. So he knew how to do that. It all depends on the makeup of the legislature. I've been here when it was all Republicans, when we had a Democrat governor, when we had split houses, when we had all Democrats and all Republicans. So it all depends on who's in charge, how much you get along with the other side, and how much you have to do. You know, we've had budgets that didn't get done till October when it was split houses. We've had budgets that didn't get done till September with Republicans controlling everything. So it all depends on the makeup, but it seems to me over time, people have the attitude is I'm right, and if I'm right, you got to be wrong. And that's sad. That's not how you govern. And compromise has become a four-letter word. You know, compromise in government is the grease that makes things work. And so when you don't have the compromise, people not willing to compromise. And honestly, folks at home, especially with all the cable news and the talk shows and all this tweeting and all this stuff, they feel that compromise is a sign of weakness, which is sad because you don't always get your way. And I hate to break it to people, but you're not always right either.
Has the growth of social media, let me rephrase that, the explosion of social media, has that been bad for our democracy and the give and take, the dialogue of our democracy, Senator?
I think it's good and bad. It's people can talk, you know, and know what's going on. But it's also bad because you can write things on the internet and not have to look somebody in the eye. And you can write things you would never, ever say to them. And that's not good. And you can hide behind that kind of stuff. It's interesting, once in a while I make the mistake of looking at Facebook, and I love Facebook because I'm on it, but you know, there's a story and then I see what people right. And then I thought, my God, that was pretty nasty. And so I look up, you know, because you can see their Facebook page, I look it up and here these women are, it's like, man, I can't believe you wrote that. Looking at your Facebook and what you portray yourself as, that's pretty nasty stuff. And it just sort of surprises me that they would do that and be so ugly in their comments about situations.
Now, when you talk about the biggest change, are you alluding to the partisan nature of the Capitol now? That it's a lot more partisan than when you joined it in 95?
I think it's the Capitol, but I think it's a state too.
Okay.
I think it's the people we represent. I mean, you know, when I talk to folks at home, they either love Republicans or hate them. You know, and it's not like, okay, we're sort of understand what's going on. I may not agree with you all the time, but we are reflecting what's going on, I think, in our state, in our country. We have become, as they say, tribalized, where it's like our tribe, this is it, and the other side is the enemy. And that's not a good way to govern in any democracy.
Do you hold out any hope that that trend can be reversed? And if so, how?
I always hold out hope. I'm sort of an optimist, but mostly a realist. I'm hoping that people will get tired of this stuff, just sort of like they've gotten tired of watching the negative news and all this stuff. It's just like, okay, you know, let's just cool our jets a little bit and not be so in your face, because that gets tough. I mean, you know, you can't hate somebody forever, because that's not good for your mental health. And so I'm hoping that as time goes on, people find out that we got some serious issues in this country, this state, this world, that we better start working together, and not having to go to the mat every time there's somebody says something on the other side.
Before you were elected to the Assembly, you were 21 years on the local school board. Do you consider your contribution on K-12 issues, public schools, well, schools in general, to be your biggest legacy?
Yeah, probably. I mean,
what are you proudest of then in that K-12 legacy?
Probably we've done some things over time. I think we passed the teacher effectiveness thing that really, because the number one thing, and depending on how well students do, is the effectiveness of the teacher. And there is some models out there that really are good at that, and the research shows if you have good, effective teachers and help them be effective, it will improve K-12 education. You know, we have report cards now for schools, which I think gives people a glimpse into what's going on. Of course, it's all based on tests, but how else do you measure? So those type of things. And honestly, sometimes the bills you killed is not how bad either. I mean, it's hard to kill your colleagues' bills, but sometimes that's what you gotta do.
You were present at the creation of Choice. It's exploded. Is that a good thing for the state?
I think it's a good thing for kids. You know, if you look at where that came from, it came out of Milwaukee from poor kids who were not getting the kind of education that they needed. I really believe that it has its biggest effect in large urban districts that have serious poverty, and that the public schools just are not being able to meet the needs. The thing that I'm concerned about is just, as they say, a check in every backpack, where we pay for every child, no matter their income, all across the state, because I don't think we got enough money to do that. You know, we have a lot of great public schools, we have a lot of great private schools, now we have charter schools, we have great opportunities for kids, virtual education, things like this. And I think one of the good things about this COVID business is people are finding out how tough being a teacher is, especially parents. You know, I see some of the funny videos that people are saying, oh my God, you know, I can't do this, help, because they just are not able to educate their kids because it just doesn't work.
But you've seen the dropout rate in both our two largest school districts, Milwaukee and Madison, 4 years, close to 70%. How can the dropout rates in our two largest districts be improved?
Well, the thing that's interesting is we ask schools to do a lot of things, to be a parent, honestly, which they can't be and they shouldn't be. But as you look at the school system, and I mean, our test scores are haven't really increased that much. The graduation rates have increased some, but not as much as they should, because kids are coming to school with more issues than they ever did before. We have mental health issues, which we really didn't have before. We have more free and reduced lunches, kids living in poverty. We have more single families, which, you know, single parent can educate and raise a kid very well, but there's always something missing when they don't have a nuclear household. And so we're asking schools to do more than they've ever done before. So I think they have improved, but the type of student that they're educating is a lot different than it was before. We have many more bilingual, bicultural kids that, you know, you talk to folks in our large urban districts where you have to teach them English before you can teach them anything else. That, we never had that before.
The current debate over whether police officers should be in the schools, the student resource officers, do you think they generally, the police should remain in the schools as SROs?
You know, most of my schools have SROs in there. And it's sad that they're there, but they didn't, schools didn't hire them because they wanted to. It's just that they had kids that were out of control and they needed some authority because the teachers didn't seem to be respected like they should. So they needed some type of authority in there to make sure things didn't happen. And if they did, they were right there to get it under control. But that's a sad commentary on our culture when you have to have police officers in a school, when you have to lock them down, when you have shootings. I mean, we didn't have that stuff years ago, and that's just the thing that breaks my heart is when you and I went to school, it's a lot different than it is now.
Let's talk about Act 10. You've had 9 years to think about it. Do you have any regrets about your vote for Act 10?
No, I think we had to do it. I mean, we didn't have any money. You know, you knew what happened, and I talked to people about this, is we were spending, before this came along, one-time money. We used the securitization money, we used the transportation money. Governor Doyle, the last year he was there, used the stimulus money.
Yes, he did.
When Walker got there, he didn't have any money, and the economy was in a world of hurt yet. And so we were going to have to, because Governor Doyle had taken the GPR money from schools and pulled it out and substituted it with stimulus money. So the stimulus money was gone, so then there was no GPR money. So what were we going to do? Were we going to say, okay, schools, we don't have the money. We weren't going to raise taxes. Are you going to have to lay off staff? Are you going to have to do that kind of stuff? And the decision was to do Act 10 to reduce school cost so that they could still have the staff, and that's what happened.
Do you think Act 10 was too harsh on the teachers' unions? By making members pay more for their health care and their pensions?
Honestly, the rest of the world was doing that already. I mean, when I came down here, even in our business, they didn't have the benefits that public servants did, and we just couldn't afford it. So, yeah, they took a big hit. I totally admit that, but it had to be done. The thing that concerns me now is now we're going to be have a shortfall in the budget.
Oh, yeah, I want to ask you about that.
Where is the tools in the toolbox this time? We use the tools. We have no more tools. So I don't know what schools are going to do.
Let's talk about this fall as we have reduced revenues. You're going to remain on finance. Some school districts are mailing residents saying statewide K-12 aides may have to be cut by $2 billion. Is that a real number?
Well, it is, but I hope it doesn't stay real. I mean, Director Lang is not sure what the numbers are going to be because, as you know, we postponed till July 15th the tax deadline. We normally know that April 15th. So,
right.
You know, we don't know what the economy is and what the amount of tax revenue is going to be. I'm hoping it's not going to be that much a shortfall. I hope that's not whistling past the graveyard. But in reality, if it is, there's things you can do, but one of them in schools are one of the biggest budget numbers, may have to take some serious hits.
Well, I want to pursue that. We've got $1 billion in our surplus funds. But if our shortfall in the next fiscal year, which starts July 1, is $2 billion, then, okay, we've got $1 billion in reserve. Do you take across-the-board cuts to get that other $1 billion? Because I assume you wouldn't support any revenue raisers, any uppers.
No, I wouldn't. Although I think that it may be serious time to look at MA expansion. I mean, there's some money there.
You willing to consider that?
I was willing to consider it before because, when you've got that kind of money on the table and a lot of other Republican states have taken it, I think you have to look at that. And, when you change your mind in politics, you have to have a reason to do this. And this is a reason, And so do we say we're going to take that expansion and we got to look at the numbers and how it works, or do we make these type of cuts to programs for people when there is money that could be on the table?
Well, let's pursue that a little bit. Are you one of the few people in your caucus willing to say, under these extraordinary circumstances, let's take a new look at MA expansion?
Definitely.
So that would not pass in your caucus today?
Well, we haven't talked about it, but the question, I guess, is when we're going to have a budget repair bill, I assume the governor is going to say, okay, here's what it is. And I'm guessing if I was him, I would say, we're going to take MA expansion, and there's this much. We're going to get rid of the agriculture and manufacturing tax credit, which I would not support.
Would you support dialing it back? Excuse me for interrupting.
No, I think that's one of the things, hopefully, that can get our economy going better.
Okay.
And so I wouldn't want to do that. And he may say, I'm going to raise income taxes. Well, I wouldn't support that either. So the question is, then if you don't do any of those, then you've got to cut programs for people. And, how much do you cut corrections? How much do you cut MA and all those kind of things?
Shared revenue. UW system.
Yep. And if you talk to local units of government, they're in a world hurt as it was. I mean, we got a letter from the city of Ripon saying, can you donate some money for our park system, because we don't have enough money in our budget to do our
homeowners parks. In Ripon got this letter?
Uh-huh, yeah. And Joan, my wife and I, Joan said, you know what, it's important, we got some money, we wrote them a check. I don't know how many else did, but when they asked for donations to run the park system, because you don't have enough money, because Ripon is not growing, very few houses being built, and so we have pretty tight clamps on those folks, and everything government or anybody buys costs more, and if you don't have the ability to raise some revenue, you got to make cuts, and they've been making cuts for quite a while.
You've worked with 5 governors. Who was the most effective?
I honestly think Tommy was.
Tommy.
Yeah, because he had to work with both sides of the aisle when he was governor. I think he was. And what did we do? We did W-2 back then. The Republicans and Democrats worked on that. We had to build some prisons, because when I got elected, there were 3 things that people, the poll showed. Taxes, which they always were, crime, and welfare. People, those were the top issues. Well, he picked up almost two-thirds of K-12 funding. I mean, I got calls from people who said, I think my town treasurer made a mistake because my taxes went down. I said, no, they didn't. That was what we did. We built some prisons because people were scared, and we passed W-2 with a bipartisan thing to help people get off welfare.
We're 18 months into the administration of Governor Evers. What grade would you give him?
Well, incomplete. I mean, Tony is a good friend of mine. He used to be the administrator at CESA 6 in Oshkosh, where when he left, my wife got that job. So I've known Tony for a long time. He's a good man. I'm not sure that the way he's running the state is probably the best. But in reality, he's got he had this COVID thing thrown right in his lap. He's had to deal with 2, I would call them professional politicians, Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Fitzgerald. I mean, they've been around here a long time, so they know how the system works. And Tony, Governor Evers, is new. He's got new staff, and so it's sort of tough when one side knows really how to play the rules, and the other one is sort of a neophyte in that area.
Is the governor too nice?
I don't know if he can ever be too nice. I mean, he's got to be tough, but I think he's tough when he needs to be. I think this business about taping the phone calls, I mean, I think he has to have somebody's head roll on that deal. You just can't let people do that, especially without you knowing it, because it ruins your credibility with the other side. So I think you have to show, nope, we're not going to tolerate that. So in that instance, he's probably too nice.
Okay, just a couple more questions. The governor's called for a people's commission to redraw the next set of maps. Why is that a bad idea, Senator?
Well, they can come up with whatever they want. It's always nice to have somebody to have some ideas on maps. The legislature still has the responsibility, and I don't think it's necessary in this redistricting period because we have split government, so the legislature will come up with a map, the governor will veto it, and it'll go to the courts, and the courts will decide what the map is, so it will be that. The thing that's tough on this whole redistricting stuff is we have the Democrats packed pretty much in the large urban areas and Republicans spread all over. So if you wanted to do what people think they want to do, you'd have some really interesting maps that would have fingers going up way in northern Wisconsin coming out of Dane County and Milwaukee County.
Spokes of a bicycle.
Yeah, exactly. So if you think that they would be nice contained things, you would have gerrymandering, serious gerrymandering, to get Republicans and Democrats. The other thing that's interesting when I think about that is you have to have the right numbers in every district. You have to have the right racial makeup. It has to be contiguous, you can't have islands. But the thing about it is when they try to throw in political bent on there, that changes over time. People's ideas change. Populations change, so what you say is, okay, this is, we made this, fair for political purposes. Well, that can change in a heartbeat, depending on who's running for office. When I look at the last election, Tammy Baldwin won 55 assembly seats. Now, if that would have went down the ballot, the Democrats would have controlled the assembly, correct? But they didn't. And so a Democrat can win in assembly seats. She's a perfect example of that.
Just two more questions.
Sure.
When COVID hit and everybody left the Capitol and the Capitol was closed, there were 160 bills and resolutions passed by the Assembly pending in the Senate. Is the Senate ever going to come back to act? And one of those is a bill you sponsored creating an Office of Water Policy. Is the Senate going to come back?
I got a lot of bills that are sitting in limbo.
Is the Senate going to come back to?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. You asked earlier if, what about people in the political arena and things like this. I think there's so many other things on the agenda that are serious. And if you look at those bills can all be taken up when I'm gone, but January is coming pretty dang fast. And so if that doesn't happen, and some of those bills waited forever, that they're new, can wait till January until the legislature decides to start all over again. And
nothing on that list of 160 that must come back and
pass?
Well,
there's some things that, I think there's some new stuff. I think, President Cross would like something done for the university. There's some things that should be done, but that window is closing pretty fast too.
Okay, understand. Yeah. Finally, what advice are you going to give your successor, the senator from the 14th, whoever is elected?
I'm going to say, which I've said to a lot of people, this job, you're a delegate and you're a trustee. In this job, being a delegate means you better vote the way you told people you were going to. There are certain things you said when you were running, you better vote that way. and know what they want you to vote on. The trustee part is, you know, there's a lot of things that we vote on that people don't know. You're the trustee of the 14th Senate District. So you need to use your best judgment to decide what is the right vote. And so but you can't be the trustee unless you're a good delegate, because they're not gonna trust you to be the trustee unless they can trust you to be the delegate.
Republican Senator Luther Olson of Ripon is not seeking re-election in District 14. He's served 25 years in the legislature. Senator, thanks for your time and good luck in retirement.
Thanks, Steve. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you very much.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.